I'm Bill Littlefield. When it comes to pro athletes, the stereotype does not always reflect reality. There's perhaps no greater example than former professional hockey player John Scott. Anders Kelto begins the story back in 2016.
When I first met up with John Scott, he was living in St. John's, Newfoundland, in the easternmost part of Canada. But his wife and kids were at their home back in Michigan. So John had set up a video camera in the living room so that he could check in on his family.
So now they don't even know we're watching. They think I'm gone.
I wonder if they're going to develop a paranoia complex.
He's always watching. Yeah, I hope not.
John is possibly the most lovable dad ever.
Oh, you want to say goodbye to Dada.
Bye, Dada. Bye, Dada. Miss you, love you.
Miss you, love you. You guys have a good day, okay? I'll talk
to you. A dad who built a career out of punching people in the face.
That's Scott. Oh, with a jersey over his head, he landed an uppercut. And another, and another.
Scott is 260 pounds. He's 6'8".
As I got to know John a little better, I have to admit, I was a little confused. I mean, how does someone who is so nice and so gentle beat people up for a living?
Did you actually enjoy fighting?
No, gosh, no. I don't think anybody would enjoy getting punched in the face. I think, you know, like, why would you ever want to, well, what are you going to do tomorrow? I'm going to fight somebody. It's like, it sounds terrible.
So how did John end up with this terrible job? And really, how did fighting become part of hockey in the first place? It turns out, it's been around for quite some time.
Yeah, it's been a part of the game since the beginning. You know, hockey's roots back in the late 1800s were that it's a self-policing game.
This is John Branch, a reporter from the New York Times.
And so, you know, without referees on the ice, if things got a little chippy, the guys on the ice dealt with their own problems.
That's how it worked for decades. Fighting was a way to police the game. Until the 1970s, when this team came along called the Philadelphia Flyers. They were nicknamed the Broad Street Bullies.
They were a team that showed that fighting and intimidation and rough play could lead to championships.
Suddenly, other teams were like, oh, that's how you win. You play rough. So teams started signing tougher players. And hockey entered this really violent era.
It's a big, ugly brawl.
And just when hockey was at its most violent, a player came along who was anything but.
Sorry to Gretzky! Scores! He did it!
Wayne Gretzky.
The greatest goal scorer!
Gretzky started shattering records.
50 goals in 39 games!
But he was young and really skinny. 6 feet tall, 160 pounds. So there was an obvious way to stop him.
Dave Taylor knocked Wayne Gretzky flat. Gretzky is on the ice.
Now, if you're Gretzky's team, the Edmonton Oilers, you can't have Gretzky getting hurt with all this rough play.
And you hire a guy like Marty McSorley to say, look, if anything happens to Wayne, take care of that other team. Protect this guy.
Rodgers and McSorley throwing some rights, and he decks Rodgers. McSorley just knocked Rodgers flat on his back.
Pretty soon, the idea caught on. Teams were like, you've got a big guy? Well, guess what? We've got a bigger, tougher guy.
And so these guys were taking boxing lessons. They were taking taekwondo lessons to learn how to wrestle. They spent more time working on their fighting ability than they did their hockey ability.
John Scott says he was never the best player on his team as a kid. But there was one thing that set him apart. He was enormous.
My coaches in college, they like sat me down. They said, hey, listen, like you're good. And you have one thing that no one has, and that's your size. Like you can't teach size.
By the end of his college career at Michigan Tech University, John had never been in a fight. But the very next year, when he joined a semi-pro team in Houston,
other teams would come in and they would see me and they'd see my size and they'd challenge me, you know. It's just natural. When you're the big guy, you always have to fight. Like, people just want to prove themselves against you. So I've been asked tons of times, let's fight. I'm like, why? Like, well, why do you want to fight me? Did I do something or did you do something? Like, why? And I'd always say no.
His teammates started to think, this gentle giant is going to snap one of these days and actually fight someone. They just hoped it wasn't against the wrong guy. And then the wrong guy rolled into town.
Roundhouse right hand by DJ King. Now some quick left hand jabs by DJ King.
DJ King was a legend in the minor leagues back in 2006. He had beaten up a lot of people, like badly. So true to form, when he got on the ice, he came after John Scott.
He was a big guy, and that's why I went after him, and that was the way it started.
And when he's challenging you, he's like shaking his gloves, and it's like you don't want to back down because then you'll be like bullied forever. And so it was one of those times where it's just like, okay, I got to do this. Like, I'm not going to back down from this guy. And so we just dropped the gloves and took the helmets off and fought.
I just kind of played a defensive fight after a while, right? Because you got to change your fight when the guy is a lot bigger than you.
So, like, once that was over, like, what was your feeling at the end of the fight?
It was relief, and, like, I was happy. I was like, okay, I was happy I didn't get beat up, and I know my team was proud of me because they were like, wow, like, you did well against this guy. And it was a huge, yeah, moment for me.
It was a huge moment because it gave John all this confidence, and it opened up a whole new world. Now, he could fight the toughest guys out there, and there was a market for that. A little while later, John got a phone call, a call he could have only dreamed of as a kid. He was joining the Minnesota Wild of the National Hockey League.
Yeah, my first shift, you look up and it's like Datsuk and Lidstrom. It's like guys you grew up idolizing. It's just, it is nerve-wracking, but it's also just like, this is cool. Like, you're there. Like, this is the pinnacle. This is the best it'll ever be.
For his first 2 years in the league, John was living the dream, making almost $500,000 a year and playing well. Statistics show that his team was better when he was on the ice. But after 2 years with Minnesota, he was a free agent, and he got signed by a new team, the Chicago Blackhawks.
And that's where the switch started.
The switch to being more of like an enforcer.
More of a fighter, more of a, yeah, just a forward who only played like 7 minutes a game, didn't play as much as a D-man, and it was just a big change.
And how'd you feel about that?
I didn't like it. Obviously, I wanted to be a player first, but again, you just do what you have to do to survive, and if that's what I had to do, I did it.
But a big edge to John Scott in this fight. Oh, and he got in another right hand.
John Scott, the best heavyweight in the entire NHL.
I mean, he's a monster.
Cam Jansen is a former enforcer who fought John three times.
He was hard to fight because he was so big. You know, he threw pretty hard, and he was pretty willing to go. So, yeah, he was definitely fearful.
John was winning all of his fights, but mentally, he was not doing well. Here's his wife, Danielle.
Like, when he first started playing hockey in the NHL, like, he was just full of energy, and he was just, like, so excited, and then it wasn't like that anymore.
Like, I would just not sleep. It was very stressful because I would just want to do well. And that's the thing. I wasn't even like a fighter. I just was worried about it.
I remember, like, I'd look over at night and he'd be like looking up hockey fights.
On the computer?
Yeah. Yeah. And then it's like, now that I know John better, he'd say, oh, we're going to play this team next week and they've got a tough guy. And he'd say that in passing. I'd be like, oh, okay. And then he'd say it like one more time. And I'd be like, okay. And now, to me, that's like, okay, I'm nervous. That's him saying, I'm nervous.
Once was bad enough, twice was shocking, and now, for the third time since May, an NHL player has died.
In the summer of 2011, after John's first full season with the Chicago Blackhawks, this terrible thing happened. Three NHL enforcers died. Two were later found to have CTE, chronic traumatic encephalopathy, basically brain damage from repeated blows to the head. The deaths caused some people to call for an end to fighting. As always, the NHL stood its ground and said it would not ban fights. But at the same time, more and more teams were analyzing game data, and they saw something interesting. Enforcers didn't actually have the positive effect that they thought. They weren't preventing injuries to star players, and they weren't helping their teams win. So true enforcers, guys whose primary job was to fight, started disappearing from the league. When John Scott first joined the NHL in 2008, there were still quite a few enforcers around. But by 2016, there were almost none. During that time, John bounced around the league, playing for six different teams and ending up in Arizona. And even though he hadn't set out to be an enforcer, he was one of the last members of this vanishing breed.
It's going to sound harsh to say this, but he became a punchline.
This is Emily Benjamin, a writer for NHL.com.
Because of what happened with fighting in the league and the way it was being phased out, he was just this sort of anachronistic figure.
So just when John had become a sort of pariah of the NHL, things took a really bizarre turn. Some guys who run a popular hockey podcast got an idea.
Oh my God, John Scott All-Star. Oh, yeah.
John Scott All-Star. So during the 2015-16 season, fans got to vote players into the NHL All-Star game. So these podcasters started a movement. Vote John Scott.
I think it really started as a joke. It was this game of if you're going to allow us fans to vote people into the All-Star game, why should we take this seriously?
John Scott is the one. I want John Scott at the All-Star game.
Oh, God, it'd be perfect.
Yes, send that man to Nashville.
The guy who came up with the idea is ESPN reporter Greg Wyshynski. At the time, he was with Yahoo Sports.
So we put the idea out there through the podcast, and then the good folks on Reddit decided to really kind of get in back of it.
And I remember sort of feeling a little bit bad about it because John Scott's a human being. So to make him into a joke, you know, it seemed a little bit like schoolyard bullying.
John Scott is cherry picking. Oh, wait, no, he just lost his breath at his own blue line.
The first few weeks, I just didn't embrace it at all. I just kind of wanted it to go away because it was just, you're being made fun of.
So John released a statement saying, thanks, guys, I appreciate it, but don't vote for me, vote for my teammates, the guys who actually deserve it. Of course, that didn't work.
There's a surprise leader in fan voting for the upcoming NHL All-Star Game, and his name is, yeah, John Scott, seriously.
The NHL viewed this as an embarrassment. They literally took the banner that you could click on to go to the All-Star Game voting from the top of NHL.com and buried it at the bottom so people wouldn't know where to vote. And so I'm thinking to myself, well, if the NHL is trying to bury the vote, they're going to find a way to undo it at the end.
A couple days later, John was lifting weights with his teammates, and the general manager of his team, the Arizona Coyotes, tapped him on the shoulder.
He calls me in to the stick room, and he's like, yeah, we just traded you to Montreal. And I was like, what? Like, are you kidding me?
Then things got even stranger for John.
The Canadians, get this, are sending the NHL All-Star down to the minors. A decision on whether Scott will actually get to play in the NHL All-Star game will be decided next week.
Now, in my mind, the All-Star game's done. Like, there's no way I'm going. They're not going to let me go.
John now had 24 hours to pack his bags and report to St. John's, Newfoundland.
Newfoundland. That's about as far away as you can get from Arizona when he was there and still be on the continent.
And to make things worse, his wife Danielle was 8 months pregnant with twins. And they already had two young daughters, ages 2 and 4.
I was like, all right, well, I just started looking at flights and the travel time was like 14 and a half hours, 17 hours, like just crazy travel times and then so expensive. And then my heart sank. I was just like, oh my gosh, I'm never going to see you.
I was extra upset and emotional and just kind of, and I just went home. I was like, holy cow. And next thing I know, I'm on a flight like 5 a.m. the next morning to go to St. John's, Newfoundland.
Hi,
Gabriella.
So John arrives in eastern Canada.
You want to go see Dada, Gabriella?
Yeah.
You know where I'm going to see you?
Hockey team.
Pretty soon, everyone is convinced that this trade was orchestrated by the NHL to prevent John from playing in the All-Star game. And then John does something that really gets the fans behind him. he reveals that the league had pressured him not to play. Someone from the NHL had called him up and asked him, what would your kids think of you playing as a joke candidate?
But once the NHL gets on the phone with you and tries to leverage your children against you and try to guilt you that way, nah, man. I go.
It went from this, your joke, the NHL's a joke, to, wait, now we're going to stand behind John Scott because this was unfair in the way he was treated.
The public pressure seems to work because soon John hears that he will be allowed to play in the game after all. 2 weeks later, he arrives in Nashville. So here John is on national television in the NHL All-Star Game, surrounded by the best players in the world.
No, I was losing it. Yeah, I was shaking the whole time I was doing it because I was so overwhelmed. And the fans, they did not help by like cheering and like all that stuff. So it was just nerve-wracking, yeah.
I was in pain. Like, getting up was real hard. Walking around was real hard. And I could tell they were close.
I'm worried about her giving birth, like, because she was due any day.
Like, you might look up in the stands.
And she's gone. She's at the hospital. Like, it was legit. I had to give someone my phone during the game. If someone calls, tell me, and well, I'm going to leave the game.
All eyes are on John Scott. And every fan is basically wondering the same things.
What would happen? What would he do? Would his wife give birth in the middle of the All-Star game? There are all sorts of storylines.
On his first shift, John gets the puck. He skates it into the corner, passes it to his teammate, Brent Burns. Burns gives it back to Scott. And then...
Scott scores! Johnny Scott!
John scores. On his very first shot.
There you go.
He's only been on the ice for a few seconds.
He's going to get a standing ovation.
It was like the perfect icebreaker. I was just like, oh, thank gosh, I got that out of the way. And then I could relax. I'm like, okay, I scored one. I didn't embarrass myself. And I can just go and play now. And it was perfect.
You know, the first goal was sort of a gimme.
Again, hockey reporter Greg Wyshynski.
You figured he'd get one during the game. They'd set him up somehow. But then comes a play of real hockey skill.
Bernsey had the puck, and I saw he had control of it behind the net. He made a nice pass to me up the middle, and I had a breakaway.
At this point, I remember watching him go down the ice on the breakaway and thinking to myself, what is this going to end up being? Because I don't think anyone has ever seen John Scott on a breakaway. Goalie's not bailing out. He's trying to stop the puck. He doesn't want to get embarrassed. He doesn't want John Scott to score on him.
And I just made a couple moves and...
And John Scott beats him. Top shelf on a breakaway. And it's bedlam.
He's got two!
And it's the big moment where it's like, okay, you know, it was a gimmick, it was a joke. But this guy just did something pretty special in this game.
I had to actually do some skating and some hockey moves, and I beat a world-class goalie. So it was a little bit gratifying to say, you know what, here you go. I got a decent goal, so you can kind of shove it.
The biggest moment was when fans are again voting for the MVP of this whole thing.
This again is Emily Benjamin from NHL.com.
The voting is on Twitter, and all of a sudden, you know, we're all watching our Twitter feed as media members, and Vote Scott just keeps popping up everywhere. And people are retweeting it, and people are tweeting it 12 times in a single tweet.
Democracy in action. Hashtag vote MVP Scott.
Is it too late to start a hashtag vote John Scott for president campaign?
And you sort of feel the groundswell of, this is where everyone wants it to be. The question is the league going to follow through?
The 2016 Honda NHL All-Star MVP scored two goals in the tournament and wins as a write-in candidate, John Scott!
What do you want to say first to the fans of Nashville?
Just thank you so much. You guys have just blown me away. I love this city, and thank you so much.
Cinderella stories in the NHL are few and far between.
Again, Greg Wyshynski.
And so when you get moments like this, where you have someone you can root for against the odds, and not only do they excel, but you get the fairy tale finish where he's literally raised on the shoulders of his teammates at the end, like Rudy, it really does become one of the most memorable things that I've ever seen as a hockey fan.
So after the game, John goes back to Michigan. The twins are born, and his minor league team tells him, you know what, John? Don't worry about the rest of the season. Stay at home and be with your family.
Oh, sorry. You know, it's harder than hockey, to be honest with you.
Being a dad?
Oh, yeah. 10 times harder. It just never stops. Hockey, there's 60 minutes, the game's over. This is 24-7, as you can hear. What do you need, kiddo? Yeah, see? Help you rake, I got a baby in my hand.
When I spoke with John in the summer of 2016, he was still hoping to get another shot at the NHL.
Maybe some team likes me, they want to sign me. I have had a pretty decent year. I've, you know, put up more points than I have prior. So hopefully I can get a shot to play somewhere. I think I can still play.
And though I hate to say it, this was the sad footnote to John's fairy tale story. Ever since the guy stumbled into becoming an enforcer, he kept trying to show people that he was also a really good hockey player. But even when he did that, on the biggest stage in the NHL, his phone never started ringing. In the fall of 2016, at the age of 34, John announced his retirement from pro hockey. Maybe, despite everything he did, he just couldn't shake that goon label.
That story comes to us from Anders Kelto. He's the senior producer of Game Breaker with Keith Olbermann. It's a new audio series available exclusively from Audible. John Scott is the subject of the first episode, but the series will also introduce listeners to an Olympic swimmer who bucked the rules, an ultramarathoner who feels no pain, and much more. We have a link at onlyagame.org.